I'm excited because my Land Cruiser is no longer at my house.
Oh boy.
It is at the shop, and this is how much of a dork I am. The other night, it got towed to the shop, and you know, I watched the guy pull it out of the driveway, and then I'm like, just trusting that it made it to the place. Until about 9 o'clock that night, I'm like, no, I'm gonna go check. And so I just like got the kids in bed, took the car out, and just drove past the place to drive, you know, just to see if it was in the parking lot. And it was. It was in the back of the parking lot. Pulled in, and I haven't been back since to see if it's in a bay. But I have definitely thought
they
about
put
it.
They put it in the very end of the Walmart parking lot in town.
Yeah, just hoping somebody will steal it and they won't have to deal with me anymore.
Now, you know what you got to do? I know all modern cars have tracking, and you could always open up the Chevy app, for instance, but put an AirTag in it just so this way every once in a while you can see if it's moving around. I have an AirTag in my car, even though I have the Chevy app. But when I left the Grateful Dead concert a few months ago, I had no idea where the car was. We were turned around. The park is it's like a circular park, so I don't know where we were when we walked out. And I was like, it's going to take us hours to find the car. But I was like, oh, I got an AirTag in the car. And I popped it open.
That's smart.
Walked right to it. And it set me a path. It's like, if you want to get to your car, walk this path.
Well, for the last year, I've known exactly where the car was. Yeah. It was in my driveway. So that wasn't a huge deal. But yeah, that's a good point. I should add it now. I don't know, man. It's been at the shop, theoretically, being worked on for this would be the third day. So... you know, I'm expecting any time in the next six months they'll call me and tell me that it's ready.
This is another thing you do when you like where all the doors are in the hood. You go back at night and sneak in with black clothes on and tape a piece of human hair
across the door,
across the cracks to see if they open the hood. So when you go in, if the hair is outside of one side of the piece of tape, you know that they opened it. Yeah. But if they don't, you can think like, yeah, we did some work all day, and you're like, rats, the hair is not pulled.
That's a James Bond move. He did that in Dr. No. He like. Pulled a hair out of his head and then licked it, like, and then stuck it to the door frame. I remember watching that one.
Yeah. Or the other trick is you could just fold up a little piece of paper and just inconspicuously shove it in the crack. And if it's gone, you know that it rolled out when they opened the hood.
Yeah.
So there you go. Go back to later.
Yeah. I'll sneak in there.
Is this why you're not married, Jimmy? You're always spying on your girlfriend.
I believe me, a lot of girlfriends wish I'd spy on them. I do not.
Oh, man.
I've been accused of being ice cold, so that's another topic.
That's funny. Well, what have you guys been up to?
Oh, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention to my Instagram, but I'm really digging in over at the Graveyard House. It's fun. I'm really enjoying the challenge of writing this debacle that's over there.
Taking
it and making it right. It's a challenge. It's really taken into a test all my random knowledge. I went to architecture school for three and a half years when I was in high school. So I know a lot about structure inherently just because of that, but then also just a lot of on-the-job training with this house and other structures that I was experienced involved with building. And this house is... It's small potatoes compared to like what Laura's doing. It's small potatoes compared to most structures. It's a lighthouse. It's not heavy and it's completely gutted. So the plaster really lightens the load. Go ahead.
Well, so I was watching, you know, I don't have the sound on Instagram, so you probably said this, but I was watching all of these other guys, you know, you're there, you're filming and they're like pulling stuff out and sticking in beams and jacking things up and everything. And I'm thinking, who's in charge here? Because I'm trying to figure out whether, I don't mean that in a negative way, I just mean like, is Jimmy directing them, telling them what to do, or is this a crew that does that? You know,
they everybody like has a, houses. It's an interesting question. It's a collaboration of all of our experiences. Because Ken does old foundations and Kurt and Hunter operate the backhoe. They do drainage and they do undermining foundations and fixing stuff. They're there to assist Ken. So the guys with the backhoe are helping them move the dirt and bring in the gravel and stuff and having that machine. So Ken wanted to undermine the building and he goes, oh yeah, we'll just put a stanchion. I go, well, we just softened the whole ground. I don't trust that a stanchion like a 6x6 we're going to dig a hole, put a 6x6. I don't trust that's going to hold the building up. And he goes, what ideas you got? He says to me, I said, well, on a whim, I bought two 20-foot I-beams a couple months ago. I was like, this is the perfect opportunity. A friend of mine, there's a local guy, I talk about him in my other podcast, T is his name. T is, he's like a junk scrapper, always has interesting deals, and he knows I buy the strangest stuff. So he called me about 2 months ago, and he says, Jim, I got two 20-foot, 8-inch I-beams. Any use, they're $500, they'll drop my, they weren't his, he knew somebody and he knew I would want them, so he said, the guy said they'll drop them off. I said, I'll take them, put them over at the graveyard house. And so on that particular day, we were looking, I'm like, how can we hold the house up and still give room to work on the foundation? And of course, we've all seen houses getting moved on I-beams and stuff, so I was like, hey, I got an I-beam, let's go across the street with the backhoe. We picked up the I-beam, brought it back over to the house, and we slid it in under the foundation, and I have the bottle jacks that I keep talking about. And I got the bottle jacks underneath it and holding. So now the house is being held up. And for insurance, we have another one. I wouldn't be surprised if the house, if that wasn't even there at all, the house certainly would droop, but I don't think it would collapse because this house has a lot of structure. It's all like integrated together. The way the siding is the actual structure for the, there's no, the siding doesn't have structure, but the way the walls were made, traditional modern technology is stick frame construction, 16 on center. This just has flat boards that are sometimes as wide as 20 inches, 2 inches thick, nailed directly to all the stringers that create the floor boundaries.
Wow.
And it makes the house, believe it or not, really, really strong. So that foundation, I think, would droop, but it wouldn't, the house wouldn't collapse because of the design of the walls. It wouldn't just like droop and crack and fall apart because there's so much.
And there's only one way to find out.
Yeah, that's it. Goes, get out of there. I'm going to loosen up these jacks. No, so yeah, even last night we had to move over one of the pillars that I have in the basement doorway. So we gently created a little foundation for another one and moved it over a few feet, and we were able to pick it up. And the guys watching, there were a couple of spectators just coming by watching, and I was doing it. They're like, wow, the house is moving. That's amazing. The house is moving. I was right there turning the twisty thing, so I couldn't notice it. But they were able to see the house move up. So I raised the house up about five to 6 inches from where it was when I got the place. That whole corner was drooped. And so once we get the stone in there and everything, and the stone is right at the top ledge, what we're going to do is we'll tighten all the jacks to lift it up like another inch, but do all the stonework and then set the house down on all that stonework. So it will compress a little bit. So it's exciting. And I took a close look at the extension. I'm going to call it. So there's the original house, the new house, and the extension. That's the part that sticks out the back, which is my last few posts, if you guys see. I'm ripping out all the walls to just take a close look at the skeleton. Then I'm going to jack up the roof, get rid of the entire wall, floor, and everything system, and then rebuild that. And so this week's video is going to have me ripping the walls off of that and ending there. And then the build back will start in the upcoming videos. So now, I have enough to put a video out on Saturday.
Is work like that nerve-wracking for you? Because you're talking about a real nonchalant, just like, we're just going to lift this house an inch and then put a new thing and then lift it another inch. And for me, when I cut stuff out of the Carmen Ghia, I got to a point where I'm like, oh no, what did I do? I ruined this. And that's an old busted car. It's not a house.
Yeah.
Is that stressful for you, or are you just like,
It's... Howard came to look at it with me, and I got a little video. I might incorporate it into. I walked down. Howard's just going, "Oh, man! I guess you know what you're doing." That's what he's saying to me. He goes, "I'm just afraid." He goes, "I watch the Instagram. I'm just afraid you're going to be underneath, and it's going to be on a pile of house of cards." The house is light enough, and it's not that complicated. This particular project, I'm totally okay with doing all this stuff. There are, if the house was brick, it would be really much more precarious because it would be multiple times heavier and more precarious to lift up a brick house because then all the brick mortar shifts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But this house is like, it's like a semi-worn cardboard box. Relatively speaking, to say, for instance, a house that's made of bricks and rocks, like a stone house would be a different sort. So that's why I keep saying the house is light, relatively speaking, and it is all tethered together with all these old nails, and that's why I think it would take a lot for it to completely fall apart. It would droop, and I'd have to fix the droop and so on and so on. But it's a challenge, and it really is putting to the test all the things that I think I know. And also, it's funny because I'm trying to figure out how to lift the house, the roof up, but I want it to look picturesque when I lift it up. So there's the filmmaker in me that's like, okay, should I do this? Mm. That would look better. Or should I do all this? That and then building the porch, which is right outside this window, that porch was a test. If I hadn't done the porch, I wouldn't be as confident as I was doing this stuff now. So every time I'm thinking, how can I lift this up? I'm like having flashbacks of me holding the roof up while I built the porch underneath it. And if I have to rebuild the floor and the extension all the way to the end of the extension, I built the floor on the porch and that's totally fine. I could do that. So I have a very basic knowledge of everything from hands-on experience working over the years. But then I got out of carpentry because it was just the drudgery and the sluggery and the physical work. I would rather do more fun stuff like inventing. So I haven't gotten really back into it until I was a homeowner. And here in the house, I kind of avoid it because it's really involved. I did this, yeah. I gutted this room and sheetrocked this room last year, and it was intense. It's like, I'm not going to stop until it's done. Because if you stop, then all of a sudden you have a room that has like sheetrock tape in it, and you never finish it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like living wall in over it here
is different.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Living in a renovation is way different than doing a renovation on, you know, a place that you don't have to see every moment of every day.
Yeah, well, it's down the block. It's nice. I ripped out all these. Oh, there's sheetrock. You don't even have tape on. It looks good,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, there's not even tape on. It's just screws.
It's an aesthetic, you know? It's like, yeah. It's a look. Yeah.
Yeah, so down the block, I ripped out this whole room. So I ended up with like probably 100 2x4s in various lengths and various amount of nails in the ends. Just threw it out the window. And it's just, I don't have to pick it up. I'm on my own property. I'm far enough away from neighbors. Then I called a friend of mine. I'm like, hey, do you want 2x4s? He's like, sure, I'll take them all. So he showed up and took them. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's the other thing, too, is doing this type of job is like managing the debris. You could go crazy. That's what drives me crazy when you watch these stupid shows. They're always trying to knock a wall down. But like if you take it apart,
yeah,
and throw the garbage away, it's a lot less to deal with on the other side. But it's always these TV producers that are excited to see a homeowner who's never swung a 10-pound sledgehammer in their life risk breaking the jawbone of their child nearby, you know, trying to break a home wall.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm up for the challenge. It's fun and exciting, and people are excited to see me get myself into this trouble.
David, what have you been up to?
This weekend coming up, we have a video coming out. I'm making this little, it's like a floor standing shelving unit that's going to go in our living room, and it's going to hide my modem and router and backup drive. Right now, it's all next to the TV, and I built something for there a long time ago, and the situation has changed, and it's gotten kind of messy, and so we're kind of redoing some things in the living room. So I'm making this little shelving unit, and the twist is we're doing it all outside the shop. So I'm working on this. I don't know what it's going to be called yet. Possibly woodworking in weird places, but I want to take. I want to be able to woodwork in like a parking lot or the park or whatever. So we did a test run, and this whole thing was built in my driveway, down at the end of the driveway, out of the back of the truck. So I got a new saw stop table saw, a compact one that I paid for with my own money. Cool. And it was a good test run because I found myself running back and forth to the shop 1,000 times each day. You think you have everything that you need and you don't. Right. So, and there's always, with the builds recently, there's been plenty of comments saying, oh, you should use regular tools. And so this will be a series where I do use regular tools where we don't have a shop. So it'll be a fun little limitation.
Well, that's interesting. So you said you were running back and forth to the shop. Are you trying to use fewer tools or just do it in a different place with the same?
I'm trying to use fewer tools. So a compact table saw. So, you know, I don't have a outfeed table. I don't have wings. I don't, you know, and I realized and when I'm running back and forth to the shop, it's because, oh, I need water to clean up the glue. Oh, I also need rags to clean up the glue. Didn't think I was going to need a screwdriver to open up this can of shellac, but I need a screwdriver, right? So I'm trying to figure out what things I need to be mobile and do things outside the shop. And I don't have a miter saw that I want to take with me. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just do all my cross cuts on the table saw. We'll limit ourselves. And I'm like, oh, I guess I need to make a sled because the miter gauge that comes with the table saw is so terrible and so small that it's useless. So we had to quickly make a sled, and it was definitely a learning process. So I think I have what I need to have this little mobile shop, and the next time we'll probably go park out front of a Home Depot or something and try to build birdhouses or whatever it is next, and just to show that you don't need a fancy shop.
Cool. You know, you were talking about like going back and forth for a screwdriver and stuff. There's a tool that I always think is very useful, has a bunch of potential, but I never go for it because it's, you know, I'm in the shop with everything else. You know, the 5-in-1 tool, the painter's tool, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like a scraper, but it also has
the hook on it.
Yeah, it has a hook and has like a hex, you know. That actually is incredibly useful for lots and lots of different stuff. I never use it because it's always next to all of the other tools that individually do the things that it can do.
Right.
But as a pack, you know, like if you're packing out to go somewhere, having that one thing on you gives you at least 5, maybe more tools in and of itself. I should like pull that thing out and put it somewhere and try to find uses for it, because it is a useful thing and I never show it off. I never, you know, use it, but that might be good in that situation to take some of those individual pieces that you have to keep running back for, get one tool that can kind of become all of them.
Yeah. One of the issues that I didn't think was going to be an issue was powering the saw stop. So I have one of those EcoFlow big batteries you can plug things into, and everything works totally fine using this battery, except for the table saw. The table saw will shut off in the middle of a cut, so the battery is not powerful enough. And then my truck also has an outlet in the back, but it's not it's just the 2-prong, not the 3-prong. So I either the choice is to get a non-saw stop table saw and sell the one I have, or to get a bigger battery that can handle the power of the saw stop.
I used to find some sort of inverter that you could plug into the car that would give you a little bit more output too.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Some of those big battery packs work really well. I have one. I did a commercial for one, but they those things work really well.
It weighs freaking 40 pounds and it's this big. Yeah. It doesn't work. It works with every tool except the saw stop. I think there's something with the saw stop brake and the electronics and the computer in there. Yeah. It'll get halfway through a cut and it'll just stop. So I used to have the DeWalt table saw with the batteries in there, and that would have been perfect for this, but I gave it to my brother years ago.
Oh. So yeah, I just found mine, one that takes the 260 volt batteries.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I was like, "Oh, there it is! I didn't know it was missing. Now I found it."
Yeah, that's funny. It shows how much he used it. He didn't even know he didn't have it anymore.
Yeah, there was. Did all three of us get a weird DeWalt sponsorship like 6 years ago, where they just sent?
I remember you guys getting it.
Yeah, two pallets of just everything.
Mm-hmm. I got a lot of 60 volt equipment.
Yeah,
I still use it all. I dig it.
Mm-hmm. I recently switched to, I gave a lot of that to my brother because it was like duplicates of things that I already had. My brother was getting into woodworking, so I gave a lot of it to him, especially he has like the table saw and the huge, massive miter saw. And I've always had the little DeWalt 611 router, but it's always been plugged in, and I'm like, oh, for this series, I need something that's battery operated. So I got the new DeWalt battery operated router. I don't know what the model
brushless
number
one
is. What yeah
is it
yeah.
brushless yeah
when you turn it off, it shuts off instantly.
Yeah, yep. That's nice.
It is really nice. Like most routers take a good 10-15 seconds to wind down. The DeWalt one has a brake on there and it just shuts off instantly.
Yeah, I've got that one, and I also have their sander, the brushless sander, and it does the exact same thing, which is really weird, because you think of an orbital sander, it's always going to, like, whir down for a while, and this thing just stops right away. It's great. Yeah, those are cool. Well, let's see. What have I been up to? I cleaned my shop, which was really nice. And I took some time last week to just, like... just sweep and put things back where it goes. It made a huge difference, just, you know, in kind of comfort level and space and stuff like that. So I did that. And then last week I built a, so the video that's coming out this week is a bedside table. And this is what I was talking about a couple weeks ago with the design conundrum that I was in. So I wanted to do a bedside table with a secret compartment. And so we had had a conversation about the secret compartment, about one way to do it. And so I'd started building a fusion model for that secret compartment mechanism and then started building the table around that mechanism. And it was just like super clunky and it just looked weird and it just, you know. And so basically I got to the end of the design and just it, I just didn't like it. And I thought it was over, I don't know, it's like there were too many pieces. Something. So I went back, changed the original, you know, the mechanism idea and just simplified it a whole lot and then was able to design from there. And it's much cleaner. It's not obvious that there's a secret compartment inside this thing and fewer pieces, simpler to build. And it ended up being much better by me taking the time to just say, nope, that's not it. I'm going to go back to the beginning and rethink the original premise. And so anyway, it's just a simple, modern, kind of nice looking bedside table. It's all out of cherry. I had a little bit of cherry plywood left over, so part of the design is around the amount of plywood that I had left. And it was like I had pieces that I biscuit jointed back into panels. You know, <it's, laughs> I had very little left. But we have a ton of solid cherry still that we got a long time ago. And so I was trying to, you know, just match all those things together. So the legs are 2x2s and then it milled down. The top is milled down and everything else is plywood. But it looks nice and the little secret compartmentness of it is really cool and works really well. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I like having it in my room. It replaced an old bedside table that I made back in like 2014 or something. So there's a video about it. It was my first welding project. I remember that.
So we both made something to replace a thing that we made in many years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bound to happen, right?
Yeah.
We only have so many things that we need, and eventually, you know, we can make a better version of a thing that we did at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, the original bedside table I made was really just two shelves, open shelves with legs. And so there was no way to not hide anything, but there's no way to like cover a mess. You know, it's like whatever you have on those shelves you see. And so I just have a bunch of books stacked and like chargers for my phone and stuff like that. And so just by doing this made it so that I could have, I don't really need the secret compartment for anything, but just having a place to stand books up and have a shelf to put things on where it's not, doesn't look like a total mess. And the whole like secret compartment thing actually came out of I wanted to make a video. This is actually, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but so I wanted to make a video about why everybody should carry a knife, because I think it's important, I think it's useful, and I think it's one of those, like, these days it's one of those things that as an adult, if you didn't grow up carrying a knife, or you know, you, somebody around you didn't have one, you're probably not going to just start carrying a knife. But it's like it's a great tool. And I think all of us and probably a lot of people listening know why that's a good idea to be useful and have tools on you and stuff. But a lot of people just, they never have. They don't see the need. And so I wanted to make a video about that, but I couldn't figure out how to make it like, I don't know, build it out enough. So it started with, hey, here are all the knives that I've ever had because I've kept them all. Like I have my first knife that I got when I was 6 or 7 or something. And over the years, I, you know, like you do. I traded this one for a bigger blade and then realized that the bigger blade wasn't actually that useful. And I went back to one that had multiple tools on it. And, you know, so I have all these different ones and I wanted to put them all in one place rather than being in all these different boxes. So I was going to make a case for them. And then I was like, well, that doesn't really, like, nobody else needs a case for their knives. So then it was like, okay, how can we put them all in one place? And that somehow turned into a secret compartment. In a, not that I need to have these knives in a secret compartment, but it's just like that process led to the idea that's kind of different. But I was able to work in the whole short conversation about having a knife on you all the time. Jimmy's like playing with a knife in the camera. into the video as a small part, as a like a conversational piece rather than making the whole video around it. So it was kind of an interesting long way around to get to the both the design thing and the idea that I wanted to talk about. I had to go the long way around to work those things in, but I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. So that's kind of what I've been up to.
You know what? You got to show the reason why somebody would need a knife, do like a man on the street or just people you know, hand them a... I have one on my desk. I can't find it. Oh, you could hand them this, for instance. And I'm holding up a replacement battery for the old
light. Oh, yep.
Hand them this and say, could you get that battery out for me? Yep. Or even worse is what I'm trying to find an example of is a memory chip. Oh, hand somebody a memory chip on a card and say, I need that memory chip. Could you get that out without snapping it in half? Please do that.
Yep.
No tools, just teeth and fingernails and hands. Yep. It's an impossible task. You can't get a memory card out of a thing with unless you have a razor blade or a knife or a pair of scissors. And again, you risk like cutting the tip of the memory chip off with a pair of scissors if you're not
or getting cutting it. Your hand with the side of the plastic sleeve that it's in or whatever. Yeah.
So it'd be funny to see if you could test five people, say, see if you could open that for me. Even if you follow the instructions on the package, it says you had to rip it open. It never works anyway.
Yeah.
This is slightly off topic, but the worst package things in the world have to be router bits. I feel like I'm going to lose a hand every time I try to open a package of router bits. Like,
I was on a TV show once, and I can't remember where or what, but the PA went and got me a pack of router bits. It was like might have been a Ryobi because it was a Home Depot thing because I remember it was green. And it was in a big blister pack. And I couldn't open it, so I just took the whole entire thing to the bandsaw and I cut right through the packaging and through the plastic cap that covers all the router bits because that's always a pain in the butt to get through.
Yep.
I just cut it all off and I just like turned it over and then the orange bottom part fell out with like still part of the lid and I flipped it open, snapped it off and threw it away. I was like, okay, let's get to work.
Well, so that's interesting. The router bits are sharp and so you have to get them out of a plastic thing that is... You know, whatever. That's why it's dangerous, great, because the thing inside is sharp. One of the best packaging things for something that's sharp is those multi-stacks of utility blades, of just like the razor blades that are in the plastic stack, and they slide out to the side. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
So if anybody doesn't know this, you can buy, you know, 50 blades or 20 blades at a time, and they're stacked up face-to-face, in a sleeve that is that shape, and then there's a opening on the side of the top. So you put your finger on the flat part of the blade, you slide it to the left or whatever, and then it comes out enough to where you can grab the non-sharp edge and pull it out. So you can't ever get to the sharp parts of this stack of blades until it is out of the box. And it's got a screw hole on the box, so you can screw it right to the wall. You don't have to worry. And it also opens and closes a little bit, so you can open and close that little slot to be able to get the blade out. They're really cool.
And
the
one I have has a place to put old blades.
Yeah, you put it back in the bottom. Man.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if mine has that, and I've never paid attention to it. Crazy. Interesting. So that's what I've been up to. You had a kind of topic that you threw together while we were warming up before this. Yeah. Jimmy, what was it?
We were talking about life of a freelancer, basically. And in general terms, I'll say that. We were talking about the life of a freelancer, how it's feast or famine, up, down, in, out. But the one thing, and this is what I reminded all of us, and it's because I have to remind myself, the possibilities are endless, and the phone can ring anytime, and the most exciting job can come through the phone or the most exciting opportunity. And that's the one thing that if you have a corporate job or if you're stuck in a civil service job, that's the one thing that's most likely never going to happen to you. But being where we are, and we could talk about influencers and social media influencers, but in general, I've been a freelancer my whole life. Any opportunities I've had for a full-time job, I've always taken their need for me and finagled it into a part-time situation with a little bit of steady income, saying, I'll do a draw on salary if you promise to pay me this much, I promise to give you this many hours. So I was always in a good position. I tried to position myself like that. So if I had a meeting with a company, like, can you give us this many hours a month and we'll give you this much pay? And I tried to do that. I always try to keep a couple steady streams of income. And in the same way, I'm doing that now with my ongoing advertisers. Same type of thing. But in the past, I would work with toy companies and I'd draw a small salary for a monthly fee. So I've always tried to do that. But in general, as a freelancer, the opportunity to have some fun thing walk through the door at any given moment wouldn't happen if you weren't a freelancer, most likely. Like, you won't get discovered in a department store and end up on the cover of Vogue.
Which is the goal of all three of us.
Right. Yeah. You won't get discovered. But so that's the reason I brought that up. I figured we could have an open discussion about it because some people are thinking about jumping into the full-time. And in our arena, full-time would mean you're a full-time content creator. Being a full-time content creator is great because you have these opportunities. You're going to get that. I'm trying to make a joke, but I can't even remember the... What is the name of that video game that everybody got the opportunity to advertise a couple years ago?
Raid. Shadow Legends.
Yeah. If you worked at a corporate job, you're definitely not getting an email from Raid Shadow Legends. That's the joke. Edit out the fumbly beginning. Actually, if you start a social media page, you'll get an email from Raid Shadow Legends.
Yeah.
Everybody was getting those ads. The idea that anything could happen at any given time. Now, I know even some smaller Instagram and some YouTubers, the TV people are always reaching out, so you get those opportunities. Mm-hmm. We've all gotten them 100 times, obviously. And it's exciting. What's more exciting, there was like somebody with a budget calls you and is like, we have this much money to spend and we want to do 6 ads with you. Or another thing is like, hey, I have this opportunity to build this thing for this children's museum. Are you interested in doing that? You know, there's like more fulfilling things that can come through the line as a freelancer that you just wouldn't get unless you open that door.
Yeah, the feast or famine thing though is like a really, if you haven't lived that life of doing freelance work and not a consistent job, then you probably don't understand how far apart those feast and famine moments can be. Like, I used to do a whole bunch of web design stuff freelance. I also had a company at one point, so I've seen that same job from two different perspectives. And when it was the job, it was frustrating at how up and down the budgets were for those things because I had people relying on me, I had stuff to pay for, all that. And then when it was freelance, it was me doing that stuff on the outside of a normal 9-to-5 job. And so any freelance, even a relatively low budget one, was extra money. It was additional money on top of my salary that I was making. So it didn't feel, the same numbers didn't feel quite as like, whoa, because it was extra. Now, if I had gone completely freelance to do web stuff on my own, I'm not sure that I would have had the patience to survive with all of those ups and downs for that particular, you know, thing, that type of job. Some people are really good at financial planning and can, you know, build up a kind of baseline so that fluctuation of up and down of income and stuff evens out over time. And I think that's a smart thing to do. It's a good thing to do regardless of your situation. But for some people, making that, leveling all of that income out to be something that's kind of stable is totally easy. I think most people have a hard time with having that like financial base to where the ups and downs don't completely freak you out.
Yeah.
So as you're moving, you know, people who are thinking about moving to any non-stable job, freelance, content creation, whatever it is, Like, that is a big consideration, not just how things are today, not just how stable or consistent money, advertising, whatever income is today, but you don't know what it's going to be like in a year, in 5 years, and are you prepared to have some stability on your own to allow 5 years, you know, to be very different than it is right now? So, I mean, we've run into that. The economics of what we do has changed a lot.
It doesn't seem like there's any advertising budgets anymore. At least they're not looking for us anymore.
Yeah.
So not nearly as much as they did.
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's really different than it was before. But you're right. If you're in a corporate job, you have the stability of knowing your paycheck and probably some sort of like a bonus schedule. You know, you kind of know that, but you also know that in the bad way, in that that's what it's going to be. The freelance, own your own business kind of situation, man, like all of a sudden stuff can just come out of the woodwork on occasion that you weren't expecting. And it can make a significant difference in you know, the resources you have available. It's just a matter of using that smartly, I guess, you know, what you have.
I'm still excited about email. Like, I don't get email notifications. I've had notifications turned off for years. But I will check my email throughout the day because there's just that potential that the email could come through.
Every morning I open, it's funny, every morning I open the email and I look and I see, I'm like, okay, I can get, Timu's asking me again.
Yeah.
I can get a little laser from Winnie in China. Okay,
right, right. Cool. Vivor. That's
cool. Okay. Bangor. Okay, Bangor's still after me. I have never emailed them back once. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But you never know. And then also, my phone number is out there in the world. My phone rings all the time. And it's, people are like, you're going to pick up that strange number? I was like, I answer every call. You just never know who it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. I have a different philosophy about that.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, I pick up every strange number. If it's not something I'm into, I was like, no, I can't do it, buddy, sorry. And then if they become annoying, I just block them. That's it. Mm. You block down the iPhone, you can block anybody. But nobody's ever... my block list is... I probably have 5 people on my blocked list on my phone.
Mm.
Because it's people go away. People aren't that annoying. I mean, obviously they can be, but I haven't experienced that person yet.
Yeah.
I've been lucky. But the idea of the excitement of, oh, this is an interesting phone number. You say hello, and then it's not a robocall, but it's somebody that got your number from somebody that needs something done. And then right away in my mind, and because of my circumstance, I'm like, can this be a good video? Can I incorporate this into getting paid by them and then also getting paid by one of my sponsors? These are all things that begin running through my mind. At the same time, I'll tell you a funny story. Somebody sends me a message the other day, and he's probably listening, so I'm going to kind of just keep it vague. Someone sends me a message the other day and says, hey, a friend of mine is needing somebody to build something in New York, and I thought of you. And I said, oh, cool. He'll give my number. So he calls me. He's like, hey, I'm in LA. I'm an art director, and there's a thing coming up for, I'll keep it vague, Viacom. Can you build this thing for Viacom for an event? I said, sure. And I said, well, what's the budget? The budget's $4,000. I was like, I could do that. That's a couple days for me to build. And the reason the job was attractive, he also said, they'll pick it up. I was like, great. That's awesome. That even makes life even better. I don't have to leave my compound. I could build it. And you guys, I could engineer it and build it. So what would you want? So I sent him a picture. He described what he wanted, and I sent back some illustrator photos or sketches that I did, which were a little bit more along the lines of like an architectural drawing. That's really cool. And then he's like, okay, I'll send over the contract. And he sends over the contract. And now for me, this is gravy. I don't need this job. I absolutely don't need this job. So now him and getting involved with an art director was in the text chain. So that's me, the art director, the guy and his art director who's in charge of him, obviously, because he's like, hey, Mr. Smith, what do you think of this? And Mr. Smith's like, well, I don't like this. I like this. And so I sent him more clarified pictures. I was like, well, it's either this or this. You could decide. So he like wanted to make a decision based on his position as a job guy, but I was like, everything's already thought of. All you have to do is decide which one you want. It's like, well, he kind of pulled a little art director ease, and I was a little annoyed by that. So now I'm already starting to get annoyed. Why did I take this phone call? Nothing goes. So now he sends me the contract. He's like, great. See, here's the contract. We'll give you 50%. Cool. Here's the thing. Just send us your fire rating certificates. So I sent it back. I said, I'm not, I said, I said, I don't, I go, if you're asking me to make this fireproof with fire rated certificates, I said, it's a deal breaker. I'm not doing the job. Calls me back right away. Oh, well, because now he has nobody else to do it.
Yeah.
I said, well, what if I do all the dirty work? I was like, when you deliver something to a venue for an event, and that venue says you need to have fireproofing and a certificate of fireproofing, that makes it expensive and complicated. And I said, I'm not a fireproof expert, nor do I know how to do fireproofing. I build things. You've asked me to build something, and now we're at that point, I'm going to build it. If it needs to be fireproofed, I'll give it to you, and you can fireproof it. Well, what if I get the material and I bring it to you? I said, I don't know. I don't know anything about this fireproofing stuff. I was like, if you want to do the legwork and teach me, and if as long as it's not too long, lengthy of a conversation, I was like, I'll take it as it comes. And
if you can teach me to do this in 10 words or less.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, I don't know. Is it a gallon of paint that gets brushed on? I don't need to get into the fireproofing business. It's not my thing. And then he keeps saying, is it going to blow over? Is it going to blow over? I was like, let me make something clear to you. It will stand on its own. I'm going to put it on a truck and then give it to you. And somebody 150 miles from here is going to stand it up. So I don't know how responsible I can be for it if it falls over. I said, it will stand because that's the nature of the shape of it. I said, but if it's going to be outside, there's wind. I said, it's up to your union guys that have to do the install to screw it to the ground. I said, so, you know, respectfully, stop asking me if it's going to fall over. Cars flip over because some outside force forces them to flip over. I can't say it's never going to fall over. If it's installed correctly and screwed to the ground, it could probably withstand a Category 1 hurricane.
I think you should have blocked this person.
But I'm saying how, like, now it's getting, this is the joy of freelancing.
Right.
You get the job,
you're like, oh, a quick $4,000. It's like the guy in Trailer Park Boys when he goes a quick $10 and he goes to hang a towel rack in the bathroom and then he sticks the drill on the wall and the light goes out and he goes, oh, probably just blew a breaker. And then he drills again and then water squirts out of the hole. And then all of a sudden the whole wall's ripped open because he's looking for the leak but the whole little clip started 10 minutes earlier with quick $10. I'm going to make a quick $10 installing this curtain rod. Such a funny clip. And now we're at yesterday. I haven't heard from him in a few days. Yesterday, he texted me out of nowhere and he just said, could you supply a list of the materials you're going to use to build this? Because now he's trying to figure out. And I just said, Home Depot plywood and Home Depot paint. That's what I wrote back. I hope he goes away. Because there's already too many questions.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, these guys need a wall built for this thing. I'm like, sure, no problem. It needs to get picked up and made in a modular so it could fit through something. I was like, I could do that. Yeah, no problem. And now all of a sudden they sent to this certificates and unions and what's it going to be, and it's the venue has to have a certain, that's why I stopped doing trade show stuff years ago, because you go into the trade show, not only do you get strung on by the union guys completely unnecessarily, you can't touch a thing because this guy has to use that plug, and you can't touch the curtain rod because the curtain union has to move the curtain rod, and you can't pick up something because the guy's curtain, the curtain rod's nephew is in the pick 'em up union, and it's such a nightmare. And so
that is a good point, though, that like even the cheap or low paying jobs, you can almost guarantee that you're going to run into something where you have to decide if it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
The expensive jobs where you get like the email and they're like, hey, we want to pay you $20,000 to make a box with our logo on it, you're like, awesome. You can guarantee that somewhere in that contract, somewhere along the process, we're like, oh yeah, but we meant a box made out of gold that's robotic, that can float, that, you know, there's all these other little, not to say everything sounds too good to be true, but when people try to sell you on something or buy you with something, they're going to do it in the smoothest, least abrasive way to get you hooked, get you to sign that contract, right? And then comes the, oh, we didn't tell you we were going to need 49 social posts every day for the month prior to the thing going. You know, it's that kind of stuff. And there will always be that. So you have to, you know, when you see those opportunities, they're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, you got to look. You got to really decide.
Temper your reaction a little bit.
My favorite something thing about that is you're not always talking to the person who makes the final decision. You're talking to the person in between. And so when you show them the box with the logo on there, then they show it to their boss. And it's not what the boss had. It didn't meet his expectations. So,
Or it goes up the chain of 10 people and each one wants to feel like they're
in the web development world, there was so much of that.
Yeah. So there's this wall has something that protrudes out of it, which is why it needed somebody that has a little bit of an engineering mind. So that's why
it's a wall. Haha, you're leaking details.
No, it's a stupid thing. So it had something protruded out. So my first drawing showed it in plan protruding out 2 feet. And my second drawing, because they're like, it's not enough. My second drawing showed it protruding out 2 feet, 8 inches. And so the art director, this is where I realized the art director was going to be a problem. So now the chain is all three of us, and I send both pictures. He goes, somewhere in between. I said, okay, so you want me to bring it back 4 inches? Is that what you're saying? He goes, what do you mean 4 inches? I go, because one is 2 foot and the other one is 2 foot 8, and you're telling me to go in between. So I'm just clarifying. And he got like, he was like, oh, just go with the first one.
Oh, man.
But I can't remember precisely what he said. Yeah, but I was like, okay, here's a guy who's an art director. I'm like, he can't even picture what I'm drawing. He doesn't even understand. I say, stand in front of a wall and stand out from it 2 feet, and then stand out from it 2 feet, 8 inches. You asked me to add more. Now you're telling me to go back. Anyway, whatever.
There is something, and this is not what you were talking about, but there is something there that I've run into in the past about people being opinionated but not decisive.
Yes, that's a good way to put what was going on there.
Yeah, so like some people want to have an opinion on, they want to have input, but they don't actually have a specific, this is what I want. I just want it to reflect me or whatever, or I want it to have my touch on it. Okay, tell me exactly what that touch looks like. Tell me exactly, you know, and I'm thinking in web stuff because that's what I did as a freelancer where I was dealing with a lot of clients and stuff. It was, tell me exactly the function that this needs to serve. I don't know. I mean, it needs to be really good.
Make it pop.
That doesn't work. I can't program good, you know. So I think you're always going to run into that too, especially when you have that hierarchy of people who are involved. It's not just like you're dealing with the person who wants the thing done. They're going to be opinionated because they want to be important, which is not a bad thing. I don't think that's always a bad thing, but not necessarily going to be decisive. So keep an eye out for that.
But here I am talking about how exciting it is to be a freelancer and the potential. I'm telling you, like an odd circumstance. But the reason I bring that up is because as a freelancer, and I have a little bit of a cushion. I don't have to take every job that goes through the door. So when he's like, you need fireproofing, there was a time in my life where I would have bent over backwards and be like, oh my God, I don't want to lose this job. I got to figure out fireproofing. Yeah. But now I don't have to take that job. And I said, I'll build it. If you want to fireproof it and put your magic dust on it, you do that. But I'm not going to do that. And I don't need to do that. You hired me to make something. I'm not a fireproof technician. I'm not getting involved in that.
See, well, that's a good point.
You got to pay your dues to get to that point where you can turn down jobs.
Yeah.
You do, but I also think it's important to not have, if you can avoid it, you know, of course, you got to eat. If you can avoid it, there is something to be said for not taking every job so that you have room to take the right jobs, right? There's something to be said about not just being so busy that when a really good, legit opportunity comes up, you're not already stretched too thin, you're not already burnt out, you're not already whatever. Because sometimes saying no is the right thing long term, even if it's just for your well-being or for your schedule or whatever. So, and that's something you kind of have to weigh through and, you know, deal with one at a time. But I turned down a lot of freelance jobs because I knew that they were a little more design focused than development focused, which is not my strong suit. Development was the thing that I was pretty good at. And I could do the other thing, but I knew that by going down that path, it was going to take me longer. I was going to a lot more back and forth because it wasn't, you know, my strong suit. And that would just eat up my potential time for more development work. So by saying no, sometimes you actually free yourself up and make it a little bit easier on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes.
Agreed. Yeah.
And these days with dealing with sponsors, it's a lot of that. Some people are super easy to work with. Some people end up having a lot of back and forth and a lot of just time that is not really worth the effort when, you know, I'm just making up numbers. You could get a $10,000 sponsorship that is a pain in the butt, or you could get two $5,000 sponsorships that are super easy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still $10,000. So, you know, you can decide how you want to spend your time, how frustrated you want to be for how long, and choose for there. But
you can, these days, pretty easy to sniff out which one's going to be the pain in the butt and which ones are going to be easy. In the first few emails, the first conversation, you can pretty much tell.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in response to that, when you can tell those things, it's good to like know your limits and know what you're going to put up with and what you want to deal with and just be really upfront about it. Like Jimmy, I think your response to them right out of the gate, I don't have to do this. I mean, I don't think you said that, but you know, like the mentality of I don't have to do this. And if it's going to be difficult, then you can find somebody else. Knowing where your line is and not being willing to bend over backward just because it's work. Bending over backward is great if it's worthwhile. And if it's something you care about and it's something you want to do, you know, or something you want to have in your portfolio or whatever, but not every time, right?
Yeah, this wouldn't be a video or anything. I wouldn't be able to show it or anything. It would just be a behind the scenes job. I get paid. There's a lot of those always going on.
Yeah. Which, you know, is worthwhile, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, any ideas for freelancers? Or
I think if you wanted to get into freelance woodworking, take on jobs, if you could find something that brings in like a little bit of steady income each month.
That's really important. Like, that's what I have a friend in my life that is freelancing full time now. And I said, what you need. You need two or three steady incomes. Even if they're $2,000 to $1,000 per month, at least you know that your rent might be covered or that bill might be covered. Bring that in.
Sell stuff on Etsy or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I've even suggested that.
Yeah. And I guess with that, one thing to think about is not necessarily, like if you were doing woodworking, maybe the consistent thing is not woodworking. Maybe the consistent thing is, you know, you're really good in Illustrator. So put, you know, go on Upwork or Fiverr or whatever and get some consistent Illustrator work that's lower effort but consistent.
Bob.
I was going to say, I think one thing that I do is when I have, this is the thing that I'm doing now, then that's the only thing that I consider doing, right? It's like if I'm programming, then I take programming work and that's what I'm doing. If I'm building things, then I just build things. But I still have both of those skill sets. So I could still right now, not that I would want to at all, but I could take on freelance programming work as a side hustle, as a way to make extra money. But then, you know, it was more consistent or more whatever, lower effort. So you don't have to just do one thing, I guess is my point.
I think you could make the metaphor that you're a gardener and the gardens, all the garden beds in front of you, all your different job opportunities, and you have to nurture them. And if one starts paying off more than the other, for instance, an Etsy account, then you got to focus your efforts there. But don't abandon everything. You just focus your efforts and make sure that you're pruning and doing whatever you need to do to keep that flourishing. And at the same time, just keep an opportunity where other stuff might begin to grow and develop and keep relationships and never burn a bridge.
My head just exploded. So this morning, I was in the backyard with the dogs looking at the two garden beds that I made during COVID, and they're still back there. We did not plant anything in them this year. And we keep joking about how we just never planted anything this year, but they are absolutely full of plants.
Still, the same plants from last year.
One of them has species. Strawberries in them, but the other one is just full of, I have no idea what plants are in it. It is... packed full from side to side. And I was thinking about that this morning about how it's really interesting how even in neglect, you can have something that grows. and it grows into stuff that you didn't put there and becomes an entirely different thing. Like it's a flower bed now. It's a weed bed, honestly, but it grew into something that I didn't create.
Six weed beds in the backyard.
But what you're saying is really interesting because you can have these, you know, garden beds, air quotes, garden beds, where you're focusing on one, and if you have multiple ones, any of those can turn around some sort of income, some sort of new opportunity. If you're just kind of keeping them all there and working on them, or not working on them, but having them available, you know, I know that didn't make as much sense to anybody else, but it's a really weird thing that you use that analogy. And I had that thought this morning.
Yeah.
Just in my head. Anyway. Cool. Well, I hope that's helpful for somebody. And if anybody has any, like, you know, thoughts around freelance stuff or the highs and lows of working for yourself, send us a message on, is it X now? Is that what they're calling it? I haven't been on there Twitter. Since it changed. Send us a
Just
message.
Just call Jimmy.
On Patreon.
Just call Jimmy and tell
call
him.
Call Jimmy, yeah.
Just Google me and find my number. Text me first. I don't always pick up.
Speaking of Patreon, big thanks to everybody over there. They can send us messages very easily. We hear from people over there every week or so. In fact, we got a message from Stephen Keller, and he's one of our Patreon supporters. He was catching up from a few weeks ago, and he said, a few weeks ago, you guys mentioned Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. In 2015, I had the opportunity to build a chitty car for the theatrical production of the movie, of the story. It was a 10-week sprint to get it done for opening night, but it's still being rented to theaters around the country a few times a year. And then he sent a video. I'm going to put the video in. I haven't watched it yet. It's a promo video for it. But I'm going to put that in the show notes because I thought that was really cool.
That's great.
But anyway, that's a message that we get from one of our Patreon supporters. So if you want to be one of those people that can easily send us messages, you can join. You can join this awesome crew of people that support the show, that get the after show. We really, really appreciate the support that they give us all the time. And that's at patreon.com/makingit. You can join up and pick the level that you want. Like I said, everybody gets the after show, but the top supporters over there, I always want to give them a shout out because we're super grateful for the above and beyond support. That's Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations. Sorry, Chad. Rich at Low and Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott Oram, The New Janky Workshop, Stu Morrison, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, the Web Ranch Woodworks. I was on a roll. And Chad Tree Creative. It's
Chad Tree,
but they're still running the Chad thing. It's funny. Anyway, we're really grateful for everybody over there. So go join up if you want to. We appreciate the support and the messages. Thanks, Steve. I have not even looked for anything to recommend.
Bob.
Didn't even cross my mind until this very second. So I'm going to do that, and one of you go now.
Dave.
All right.
You go. I'm looking
Jimmy.
Trying to find something I haven't already recommended.
This one is by Vice, and it's called Spike Jonze's Legendary Career. And it's basically a 45-minute documentary on Spike Jonze. And I watched it the other night. And I thought it was going to be like this little background thing that I put on, and I was just totally inspired by it. I love Spike Jonze's work in videos, music videos, and film. And one of the great things, it starts off and the interviewer is asking him, like, let's go to the beginning. Where did you grow up? And then Spike's like, I don't want to talk about that. The interviewer's like, come on. He's like, that doesn't matter. And Spike, he's always just done what he's wanted to do, and he's done it differently. And I think that's what makes him such an amazing filmmaker and an amazing creative person. And it was just, it's super inspiring.
And he started out doing skate videos.
You're doing skate
while
videos.
While you're sleeping and that type of stuff.
And kind
of
accidentally got into that. And it goes in through all that. And then he, by chance, Sonic Youth saw one of his skate videos and wanted him to shoot a video. And then the next thing you know, he's making videos for the Beastie Boys and Weezer. And then after that, it's feature films. Like, he didn't go to school for this stuff. He just kind of fell into it because he's so creative, and it's super inspiring. I used to have this, I don't know if it was like the probably early 2000s, this 3 DVD set, and it was all music videos, and each DVD was a different director. One was Spike Jones, one was like, I forget how to say his name, Michael Gondry, and then another one, and it was just music videos, but super creative. And I after watching this, I went to see if I could find these DVDs for sale, and they're for sale for like stupid amounts of money, like $200, and I wish I would have hung on to them, but.
Oh, like the CYCK videos and all that stuff. Yeah, like from the beginning of time. Yeah. Can't Kill Yourself.
Yep. And Spike Jones used to do he also was behind the camera on Jackass. So like stupid things. Like I never really cared for Jackass, but I watched it.
I want to check that out. You know what's crazy when you think about it is that Bam, who, you know, hopefully he doesn't kill himself. He's not in a really good way, Bam Margera. But Bam made all those Can't Kill Yourself videos himself.
Mm.
And then him and Johnny Knoxville like merged. But all those CYC Way, Can't Kill Yourself, those first couple of videotapes, VHS tapes, Bam edited all that stuff himself. He was like the spearhead for all those original videos. It's pretty amazing. The wacky situation he created for himself.
It's so
I'm going to recommend a
Just like it's so fun when you're pleasantly surprised. Like you just go to throw on a video and you check, just would be background, and then by the end of it you're just like your face is up to the screen and you're just totally inspired. This was one of those things.
Is that what you just sent in the text message?
Yeah.
Oh good, I want to watch it. I'm just going to recommend a podcast called Hidden Brain. It's an old show. It's been on NPR for years. It's called The Hidden Brain, and the Shankar is the host, Shankar Verdantin, I think is how you say his name. And it's a great show. There's a lot of, like, for instance, this week it's called Slow Down, and it's just stop and enjoy what you do. It's very NPR-ish. It's slow-paced, and it's soft in its delivery. But it's definitely good topics there to get into. Hidden Brain. It's been around forever. I'm just looking through what I've been listening to lately, and it's at the top of my list.
I've actually been looking for a new podcast, and I came across that name in a list, and I just remember seeing the name, so that's good to hear a recommendation for it.
Yeah, it's good. I've been listening to it for years.
So talking about podcasts, I haven't watched anything new in like as long as I can remember, so I don't have a good video to recommend, but I do listen to No Dumb Questions, which is a podcast with. Mm-hmm. You know, two of my good friends, Destin from Smarter Every Day and Matt from the 10 Minute Bible Hour. This podcast is them just having really interesting conversations about all sorts of stuff. And it's funny because they're both my friends. So I listen to it because I want to hear them. But a lot of times the title, the topic is something I'm like, I don't know. I mean, like I have a limited amount of listening time. I'm not sure if this one is something I'd be interested in. And every single time I bite the bullet and I just listen to it, every single time I get about 10, 15 minutes into it, and I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad I didn't miss this. Because they thoughtfully and, you know, I don't know, deeply talk about these all sorts of stuff. And it's funny and it's light and it's varied. And it's just, it's a really good show. It's one of those shows that should be way more popular. I don't know how popular it is, but it should be way more popular because it's just, it covers a lot of ground. They're so much fun to listen to. And anyway, so give it a shot and realize that every episode is pretty different. It's the same dynamic, but they talk about, you know, all sorts of stuff. They had one that I listened to the other day about weapons, and it started out talking about, you know, different types of medieval weapons, and then ended up on, if you had to survive a raid, basically what weapon would you carry with you all the time and why, which sounds kind of dark and stuff, but it was really funny too. So yeah, there you go. It's a really good show. Go check it out. Well, you guys got anything else for this week?
I think we're good.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
And, thanks for listening.
We'll get you... Oh, wait. Are we recording next week? Because I'm not going to be here on Wednesday.
Where are we going?
We're going to Arkansas. Remember?
Oh, well, I'm going to.
Yes, you are going to. But I'm going to be in a car on the way home the time that we normally record.
Oh, maybe we could tape Thursday.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we could do Thursday.
Okay. Well, never mind then. All right, cool. Thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah. Next week, I'm going to be in Russellville next Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Russellville, Arkansas. I'm going to be at the... I keep getting the reminder to promote it. So, Bob, you're going to be there too, right?
Yes.
Good. Thank you for coming to that. I think it's going to be fun. We're going to go check out the factory situation that I'm involved in and just promote it and just relish in a factory situation made in America. And we're all going to hold hands and sing songs in the factory.
I thought I was going to go. Maybe I'm not going to go.
I'll post on Instagram the address and the times and everything else. Russellville, Arkansas, Main Street, the old Walmart is now Nile Industries, where we're manufacturing in America.
Cool. All right. We'll see some of you there, and the rest of you we'll see next week. You guys are so weird.